Let's talk to Bruce Williamson from Rail Futures. Bruce, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mike. How you doing?
Not bad at all. Not bad at all. I would have more sympathy with Grant Shapps, one, if he wasn't quite so cheesy, but also, two, if, in fact, the train services that he's so enthusiastic about today were actually running over the weekend, which many of them were not.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit bizarre, that video, isn't it?
It is.
The point about trains not running, I suppose, you know, as ever, rail maintenance has to...
Oh, I mean, I've kind of lost you already.
No, there's no time that... Oh, no, you still got me?
I still got you, but you're sort of cutting in and out. We'll stick with it for a while.
Okay. You know, rail maintenance has to be done at some point, sadly, and whenever it's done, it affects people. But yeah, your earlier point about the cost of living crisis, is absolutely spot on here. This, you know, it's all well and good to reduce the price of rail travel as a sort of temporary gimmick, but, you know, those people who, you know, need to use the train every day to get to work, they're facing a cost of living crisis. This won't help them at all. And, you know, their cost of commuting remains outrageously high. And that's the problem that the government needs to address, I think.
Yes, I think that's right. But also, I mean, the general infrastructure still is in need of some repair, is it not? I mean, I don't really know what's happened to Crossrail, to be honest, anymore. I presume they've stopped working on it. I don't know whether they're going to start working on it again. What's going on with that?
No, Crossrail is coming along nicely. It's, you know, it is going to open in stages. I think part of it actually has already, and they're running test trains, and it's nearly complete. It has overrun, inevitably, as some of these massive engineering projects always do. But, you know, again, I'll go back to my point that the sad fact is that engineering has to be done at some point, you know, and people don't like bus replacements. I understand that. But the alternative is to let the railways crumble until they're completely unusable. So,
well, surely the sensible thing to do, though, is to actually check when the trains are less busy, which now is not so much bank holiday weekends as it is regularly during the week, because so few people are going to work on trains anymore.
Well, the sort of commuting levels are back up to about 75%. But, you know, you can bet your bottom dollar that
apparently, because according to Jacob Rees-Mogg, there's all sorts of government departments with less than 30% occupancy in the offices. So that must have an effect.
Undoubtedly, but there are more workers than just those who work for the government, you know. You know, whatever the actual figure is.
But the point is that, you know, there's actually, on a big, busy bank holiday weekend, including a cup final, two cup finals, in fact, at Wembley, one of which involves Manchester and Liverpool, to not have a train, frankly, going down the West Coast is absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, but again, you can bet your bottom dollar that if it was during the week, you'd be bombarded with calls from people who want to get to work, who can't get to work.
Well, no, because here's my point, you see. The point is, now that we are more flexible, supposedly, about working from home, you would know that you couldn't go on a train to get to work, so you would say to your employer, I'm not going to come in over the course of the next 3 days because there's no trains. What do you make of that? And they'll say, yeah, that's all right, that's fine. And away you go. Makes a lot more sense than what they did.
Well, if your employer is Jacob Rees-Mogg, that would cut no ice, because he's insisting that everyone goes back to the office now. He says the days of slacking off at home are over.
But they're not over. That's like, the reason he's saying that is because they're clearly not over, because people are still doing it.
The point is, like, you can't please all of the people all the time, you know.
But unfortunately, if you're in the railway business, you don't please anyone.
Well, you do, because, you know, people are travelling today. Trains are running. Some workers are using the trains today, so...
Yes, they are, but they don't enjoy it very much, most of them. You know, they're only doing it because they have to do it. It's the same reason people drive. The reason people drive, for example, if they've got a family of four and they need to go somewhere, is the trains are too expensive.
Yeah, and the cost of fuel is outrageous as well. I mean, I totally agree with you about the cost of rail travel. You know, that is a major issue, and we do have, you know, amongst the most expensive rail fares in Europe. And this scheme is good in that it sort of tempts people to try the railway.
Yeah.
And if they sort of, you know, try it and like it, hopefully in the future they'll try it more often, and will help to get people back on the trains, and that means more revenue for the rail industry, and it makes the rail system more economically viable, which of course is a good thing, you know, and it's good for the environment. It's actually good for the roads because it reduces congestion, and so on and so on and so on. But you know, for those people who want to travel, there's they say there's 1 million tickets, which sounds fantastic, but actually it's a bit of a drop in the ocean compared to the number of tickets that are sold every year, you know. So this scheme, these 1 million tickets will run out fairly quickly, and I fear there will be quite a lot of disappointed people, and those people who want to travel, you know, on a train now. Of course, it's only advance fares that this applies to.
Right.
If you want to travel now, then you've still got to pay that outrageous full price.
Yes, that's the problem. And an awful lot of people tell me, who use the trains on a regular basis up and down the country, that you'll still quite often get to the station and your train's cancelled because there's no driver, or because people are, you know, working from home, and they can't drive a train working from home. And an awful lot of trains up and down the country are absolutely rammed with people because there's two train loads of people on one train.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know... I'm not defending cancelled trains, but I suppose you've got to ask why they've been cancelled, and it's partly down to sort of lack of long-term investment in the railways. It's down to the fact that there aren't enough relief drivers because, the train operating companies can't afford to employ them because they're having the squeeze from the Department for Transport to cut costs. So the rail industry is sort of, you know, running on a shoestring budget, cut to the bone. So if anything goes wrong, then it doesn't have that sort of spare capacity to be flexible and to cope with those sorts of problems.
Yes. But that is a surprise in itself as well, isn't it? Because they've been doing this a long time. It's not like somebody suddenly went, why don't you try running a railway and see how that goes? I mean, you know, there was no Gatwick Express at the weekend. There was no Heathrow Tube. I know that's a slightly different kettle of fish. I'm not sure if there was a Heathrow Express or not. But, you know, that's just hopeless. A bank holiday weekend, Easter holidays, school kids going away with their parents, and you can't get anywhere.
No, I mean, I agree. You know, in an ideal world, trains would run, you know, to a perfect timetable all the time.
But it doesn't have to be an ideal world, Bruce. It just has to be not a completely shambolic one.
Well, is it shambolic? I mean, are rail...
Well, the people that use trains all the time, and I'm not one of them, will tell you that it is.
Yeah, the overall reliability figures, the punctuality figures, are about average for Europe. So you can't sort of say, well, the French are doing it perfectly. You know, these sort of things happen in France and Germany and Denmark as well. You know, it's a sort of sad reality about the railway. I mean, you can, I suppose, mitigate it to some extent with extra investment, extra capacity, newer trains, spare drivers and so on.
Yeah.
But that's all money that the government is very reluctant to invest in the railways.
So these are supposed to be privately run railway companies, aren't they?
No, they're not. They are, but...
I mean, what about, take Avanti, for example, the people that run the West Coast main line. That's a private company, isn't it?
It is. They're all private companies.
Well, how much profit do they make?
Very little, actually. But the key point is that they are contractors to the Department for Transport. So they're basically doing what they're told. They're kind of middlemen. They have very little flexibility when it comes to decisions about how many trains to run and which trains to run. They don't own the trains themselves. So, you know, the buck stops with the Department for Transport. It's really not much that the train operating companies can do about this.
No, there isn't, but the point is they wouldn't be doing it if they were, you know, committing harakiri and losing a load of money, would they?
I don't understand your point.
Well, my point is that the companies running these train services wouldn't be doing them if they were getting poorer as opposed to getting richer.
No, yeah, they're making a profit, but the profit margins are pretty tight. I mean, there's, you know, there's an argument that says what you seem to be suggesting there is because they're making a profit, well, perhaps that profit would be better ploughed into the railway itself, and that's an argument for nationalisation.
Call me old-fashioned. or even making the trains run better. You know, having more drivers, you know, they don't need to pay six-figure salaries to the chief execs and the board members and the trustees when they could actually hire more people to work on the front line. It's like the NHS, you know, the NHS has got plenty of money, they just don't spend it right.
I'm not going to get into the NHS because I'm not an expert
on that. I'm not asking you to get into the NHS. What I am saying to you is that surely there could be some trimming that went on inside of the corporation and make the trains actually run because they've got enough drivers as opposed to not having enough drivers.
I mean, yeah, I'm all in favour of cutting excess pay for fat cat bosses, but I don't think compared to the costs of running the railway as a whole, it would make that much difference. But yeah, you know, we need a much more transformative big thing than this sort of little tweaking. And again, I come back, it's all in the hands of the government. Almost everything that's wrong with the railways, I can hand on heart blame the government for.
But it's been wrong for a long time, hasn't it? I mean, they tried it.
Yeah.
When it was nationalised, it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
And then they denationalised it, and it wasn't very good. And it's still not very good. And if they did renationalise it, it would still not be very good, because they got the wrong people running it, I think.
There may be some truth in that. But, I mean, there are some good people running the railway, and I know some good people who are ex-railway people. The problem when it came to British Rail was that for decades, under governments of both political flavours, there's two problems. It was starved of investment, so it was always running on a shoestring budget using clapped-out trains. And secondly, because rail is a very sort of long-term business, the rail industry to work well needs long-term finance. And it's always, when it comes to the government, it's short-term. It's feast and famine. Yes, you can have the money. No, we've changed our mind. You've got to scrap that. And that causes chaos. And we've seen it with, Northern Powerhouse Rail and electrification of the Great Western and all these sort of rail schemes. Yes, it's on. No, it's off. Yes, we're going for it. No, we're scaling it back. That's part of the problem that the railway has had to endure for decades.
And what's coming with this Great British Rail sale then? Where's that money coming from?
I've no doubt that ultimately, because the government pays for everything pretty much, that they are financing this. It's the taxpayers' bottom line. But it, because all the tickets are off peak and advance, it will mean that they're filling empty seats, basically, on trains that would be running anyway. So the additional cost to the industry that the DfT has to bear is actually very little. So, on that basis, one could argue, well, why don't we do it year-round? As someone who campaigns for cheaper fares on a long-term basis, I would support that.
Yeah, I suppose so. But, of course, again, won't these all be bought up by the sort of middlemen and the various train apps that you can use and the various kind of wholesalers that can sell you a ticket rather than actually like individual customers? Hadn't I thought of that?
I hope not. I had a quick look on the website. You go to the National Rail website and it leads you to various train operating companies. So I think these are being sold through the train operating companies' websites.
Right.
And I think that would prevent, ticket scammers buying up all of them.
HS2? What's going on with HS2?
Well, that drags on, doesn't it? This is an example of what I was saying. It's on, it's off. Feast and famine. Yes, we're going to build HS2. Oh, no, we're going to cut the eastern leg. No, we're going to do this instead. And, again, it creates confusion in the public minds. It's a nightmare for contractors because they can't plan ahead and they charge accordingly. I'm very unhappy about the long-term excess costs. The price just keeps rising. The plans are not stable. And obviously right now we're in an industry where passenger numbers are down, but I'm very confident that long term all those passengers will bounce back. And for that reason, I think we need that extra capacity that HS2 will bring. So it's a good thing, but possibly not done in the best way possible.
No, but when's it going to be ready though?
Probably just about within my lifetime.
I mean, that's the other thing, isn't it? Absolutely hopeless. I mean, I don't think I'll ever see it. I think I'll die before, you're a bit younger than me, I'm pretty sure I'll die before HS2's finished. And I'd be pretty surprised if I even get a go on Crossrail before I die as well.
No, Crossrail is just a year or two away. That will be running. Yeah, that's
it. But it's been a year or two away for quite a few years now.
That's true. Yeah. But I'm reasonably optimistic you will get to ride on Crossrail, Mike.
Wants to go from Old Oak Common to Stratford anyway?
Well, quite a lot of people, actually.
Really?
It's all the journeys in between and the other options that it fills that's really important. There is a capacity crisis, well, across the railway generally, but particularly in London. So I've absolutely no doubt that Crossrail will be hugely successful, even though, quite rightly, I've got no great desire to travel to Old Oak Common either.
And how much is it costing?
Quite a lot of money.
Right. Billions? More? How many?
I've no idea. It's billions.
Well, yeah. So how do you define success then?
The number of passengers using it.
Nice.
So it doesn't have to
make a profit or anything.
It'd be nice, but in fact, it might do. I mean, there are some rail routes that are busy enough that they actually make a profit, notably the East Coast Main Line. But
Well, they can't find anyone to run that, though, can they? They keep having to change operators.
Yeah, that's right. That's
well,
why.
Probably... Why can't they find a decent company to run it?
Well, okay, because what happened is that the operators who did run it overbid. They had over optimistic forecasts of how much revenue they could raise, and the Department for Transport, when assessing those bids, because it wants the most money or the least subsidy, always goes for the bid that is going to offer, you know, the least subsidy or the most money, which means that the bidders stretch themselves to get the bid, to get the contract, and then they realize that they've overbid for it and they go bust.
Yeah.
It's happened three times. So, you know, one could argue, on the one hand, this is, you know, why privatization was a nonsense. On another hand, you could argue that privatization was so successful it was the victim of its own success.
Yeah.
You take your pick.
Yeah, well, either way, it looks like a big fail to me, whichever way you cut it. But anyway, I suppose you and I will be having these conversations till we die as well. Bruce, thank you very much indeed. Bruce Williamson there for Rail Future. I mean, it just doesn't get any better, does it? What's going on? What's wrong with the rail business in this country? If you travel on it, you can probably tell me. We'll take some calls coming up after this.